Hello, everybody, and welcome to the third episode of Awards Blend, which is a new podcast that we're adding to the Cinema Blend network of podcasts. And this one is dedicated to all things awards. And finally, in 2018, we have some exciting actual awards to talk about. We have results from shows that people care about, and we're going to start to refine the Oscar race as we get down to, an awards ceremony that's going to be held in 2 months from now. So, keeping you occupied and up to date on everything Oscars and awards and movies, my name is Sean O'Connell. I'm the managing editor here at Cinema Blend, and I'm joined by my two co-hosts and very close friends, Mr. Jake Hamilton and Mr. Kevin McCarthy. Boys, how are you?
Doing well, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Kevin, you doing okay?
I'm doing great. As long as your Chiron says Jonathan, that's all that matters to me.
I think it does. Well, I'll make sure that Gabe corrects that. It doesn't happen.
Thank you, sir.
Just to catch people up, we were not going to start this podcast until 2018, but we did two preliminary episodes to get the ball rolling, and there were some major things that we really wanted to talk about, including Star Wars The Last Jedi, which we reviewed on episode 2. We gave our top fives, and now we have an official RSS feed and an iTunes subscription link and all of this amazing stuff that you guys can go back and see our archives. But as you can tell now, if you're watching right now in the moment, we are live on YouTube, and hopefully a lot of people are tuning in and paying attention, and we have a ton of stuff to get to heading into 2018. And I want to start with the Golden Globes, because we finally, like I said at the start of the show, have an awards program where there are results. And I think the three of us have been saying this year, more than any other year, it does not feel like there is a clear-cut front runner. Kevin may argue it's Dunkirk. It very well may be Dunkirk.
It's not Dunkirk.
Any of these award shows can go in any different direction, and I don't know necessarily what they tell us about the Oscar race, so we're going to discuss that. Coming out of the Golden Globes, the movie that had the most momentum seems to be Three Billboards. Were you guys really surprised at Three Billboards taking some major awards at the Golden Globes?
I was. I thought it was good. I thought Shape of Water was going to be the one that really came out of the Globes strong. I mean, you could say what you want to about how much weight the Globes carry whenever it comes to the Academy Awards, but there is no denying that it does force the voters to say, well, maybe I do need to give that movie a second look. And those that may have passed over Three Billboards the first time around, or maybe they didn't love it as much, the public's now at least talking about it, because that's not a movie that obviously is right in front of the public psyche like Dunkirk. But a lot of, you have to admit that, like, it did get a little bit of a boost. It might not result in an Oscar win, but I guarantee you that there are some voters that are putting that screener back in their Blu-ray copy, or their Blu-ray player right now.
Right. Yeah, I was definitely surprised to see it take home Best Picture Drama. I'll say a couple things about Three Billboards. I think it's a phenomenal film. I think Martin McDonagh is a great director. I love In Bruges. I'm happy to see a film like that in an awards race. I don't think Three Billboards is anywhere even close to a best film of the year in regards to a winning. I think it's top 15 of the year for sure. I will say the happiest thing of the whole night for me was seeing Sam Rockwell win. Yeah. I've been, ever since I saw Confessions of a Dangerous Mind with the Clooney-directed film, he has blown me away as an actor, and Matchstick Men, and specifically...
Green Mile.
Green Mile, but Moon to me was the film
Moon.
Where... I'll just never forget seeing Moon for the first time, and I remember like I was just hoping that he would get a nomination at least, and or maybe a win, and that just it never happened. So, I'm always kind of against the idea of an actor or a movie or somebody winning for their career. But Rockwell was so great in Three Billboards that it just made me happy to see him up there, and he even said during his speech that I'm in a lot of films that no one really sees. To me, that win was specifically for the ping pong scene in Moon or Matchstick Men or whatever movies he's done. Frances McDormand, no question, deserves it. Those two awards, I'm happy with. I'm not happy, though, with the idea of it now having a Best Picture momentum to it. I thought, going into Sunday, I thought it was either going to be Shape of Water, Call Me By Your Name, or Dunkirk. And I know Dunkirk.
You never thought it was going to be The Post?
No, I don't feel The Post's momentum this season. And I think The Post is a great movie, don't get me
That's
wrong.
That's fair. I mean, it should have taken off already if it were going to. I kind of agree with you.
I also don't, and correct me if I'm wrong, it didn't get nominated for a SAG ensemble, which
right.
I thought was...
And it got left off the BAFTA list today.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's such
really
an American
weird.
Movie, though. It really is. I could see the BAFTA.
Yeah, but we're nominating two movies about Dunkirk.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, no, it's true. And one thing I will say, and to give credit to someone like a Nolan, I mean, like obviously when you release Dunkirk in the United States, and it has nothing to do with America. This is prior to our entry into the war.
Yeah.
It does really well here, which is really cool. But that aside, I mean, I've come to terms with the fact that Dunkirk's probably not going to be a front runner in regards to best picture winner. Though I am worried now about the director category. So I think initially, earlier in the year, I think we all thought maybe there'd be a split. I think it'd be I think Dunkirk director would go to Nolan, and then picture would go to Shape of Water or something like that. But now Del Toro seems like he has the momentum.
Well,
yeah.
But this is why this is so important, because I mentioned at the top of the show that we have two more months for this picture to change shape, no pun intended, in the fact that what is a front runner now might not be at the end of February, and gaining momentum coming out of Globes, because the Globes aren't important from this perspective. Nobody voting for the Golden Globes are Academy members. They are Hollywood Foreign Press Association members. This is the movie that they like. But as Jake was saying, right now we're in the nomination period where Academy members are going through all of these potential contenders. So when they hear something get some recognition, then as you say, they're going to go back to their screen and be like, oh, I didn't look at Three Billboards yet. I'm going to watch it. Or I watched it one time and I really didn't like it. I'm going to give it another shot.
Maybe I missed something.
Maybe I missed something. Right. So a win at the Golden Globes gives something publicity, and that kind of momentum really counts. And so I think when a film doesn't get something, and that's like, to me, I'm looking at Get Out, Okay, so Get Out moves to another category, which the three of us discussed, it probably didn't even belong in anyway, right? Comedy musical. It's a funny movie. It's a horror movie, so that's a bit of a tough sell on the awards race. But they drop it into this category where the competition doesn't look that stiff. It loses to Lady Bird, right? But I thought if Get Out was going to get some momentum, this was a chance for it to maybe come out with Daniel Kaluuya, getting a Best Actor nod maybe, and he doesn't get it. And then the picture picking up some momentum with a picture win. I thought that it's not that its Oscar chances got hurt, because again, Hollywood Foreign Press doesn't really do anything for the Academy, but I thought a couple of wins, if they might have been surprise wins, would have really stoked that fire for, hey, Get Out's an actual awards contender.
Go ahead, Jay, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I felt like this time 7 days ago, I knew people that thought Get Out was going to win Best Picture. There, I even on air here in Chicago, got into it with an anchor about the chances of it to win Best Picture.
And
now,
do you think that conversation changed now?
I don't feel it in the air anymore. And I kind of agree with you. Like, in the same way that I don't particularly feel it with The Post. Like, I feel like we've been saying it for weeks and weeks and weeks, but at a certain point, it should have won something else. Like, it's not going to just come out of the blue.
The Post hasn't gone wide yet. Like,
That's true.
If more people start to see it, and because it's such a relevant movie to right now. And I think if more people start to see it and start to beat the drum for it, but it feels like it's missed its window already, and it's not even open yet.
Yeah.
I love The Post. I think The Post is an incredible film, but I don't think that film is going to be an awards contender in the major categories in regards to the winning. I think it will definitely get nominated for picture. I'm pretty sure Hanks will get in, Streep will get in, Spielberg will probably get in as well. I just don't see it winning. I think Post might have the same outcome as Dunkirk. I think it's going to get a bunch of nominations, but I don't think it's going to necessarily win anything. But going back to Get Out, for example, that was a really big mistake that was the musical and comedy. And I will say this, I think that Get Out's chances at the Academy are no question they're going to be fine. I think it'll definitely get a picture nomination. I think it'll get a screenplay nomination, hopefully. Daniel Kaluuya, I don't know what's going to happen there because of they only have five people to choose from. We were discussing that today on text. I think Get Out, if it gets nominated, it's a win for that movie. I think that it's a movie that came out earlier in the year. Films like that necessarily get forgotten because they come out so early in the year. And same thing happened with Logan, unfortunately. So I think we'll see what happens. I think Get Out, no question, will get nominated. I don't see it winning. I think right now it's going to come down to Shape of Water versus Three Billboards. I think that's our Oscar race right there, is those two.
Yeah, I can't.
It's hard to disagree with that. Yeah. Okay, so I have a question for you. Going back to the post, because I felt like leading up till Christmas Day or maybe New Year's Eve, I feel like at least I would have put my money on the post because, you know, the argument was that it's the movie of the moment. But the award shows, as opposed to last year, aren't really about Trump this year. Right now, it's about the Me Too movement. It's about Time's Up. Do you think the post is maybe not feeling as relevant to voters as they thought it was going to be because Trump is not the topic of award shows right now?
But I would argue that the post is more about women and equality than it is about politics. I mean, there is obviously a parallel between there's obviously a parallel between the Nixon era and the Trump era and the freedom of press. But I felt a lot of the interviews and a lot of the momentum behind the post was about Katherine Graham and her being a woman surrounded by so many men and making
which I'd argue is the best decision. plot point of that movie.
I agree,
but so, that's not how they're selling it. Marketing is heavily into newspapers
the importance of journalism.
And reporting. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's, I totally agree. But to Jake's point, though, considering the movement of Me Too and everything happening with Hollywood and sexual harassment and masculinity and whatever it is, I mean, you, when you see Phantom Thread, you saw Phantom Thread, Jake. That's about, has an element of that as well. He's an overpowering person, and like the woman, in my opinion, is the one who kind of sticks up. And but I don't want to give it too much away. But it is. I think the post kind of falls into that category where it actually would be a perfect marriage of what's happening right now. So I don't know. I just don't think the movie is as good as it needs to be in order to win. That's all.
All right, let's shift over to the actors and the actresses who picked up some Globe hardware and I think probably all built some momentum. In the actor side, we saw Gary Oldman. With the Globes, it's hard because it's 10 people, you know, in two different categories. We saw Gary Oldman and James Franco both take home Globes. I know Saoirse Ronan picked it up for musical comedy and Frances McDormand picked it up for drama. I think all four of them find themselves in contention when the Oscars roll around. I'd be stunned if nominations come out and all four of them aren't included. But of those two races, say it's Saoirse Ronan and Frances McDormand as the front runners and actress. Let's start there. Do you guys think that either of them can be viewed as the best actress front runner? And if it is the two of them right now at the moment and not say maybe Meryl Streep who gets in or even Sally Hawkins. Sally Hawkins, who I thought was the front runner, and all of a sudden she's behind Saoirse and Frances. Do you think either of them has an edge?
Kevin, you want to start?
I think Frances McDormand might be the only lock that we have going into the Oscars.
Really?
I thought she was going to win the moment I saw that movie. I mean, that is a performance that just completely just takes over. I mean, there is nobody that commands a presence on screen like she does this year. She reminded me of just the way she walks into a room. You never know what she's going to do. She's unpredictable. It is literally a performance an actor dreams of doing. It's a brilliant performance. And I think going into it, I think that performance, it's very showy. It's brutal at times. The dialogue is amazing. I think that to me is the front runner. I don't think Saoirse has a chance.
See, here's where I will refute you because I don't think as many people love Three Billboards as I, you know, like we were saying how there's not a crossover with Golden Globes and the other voting circles. As much as like, you know, I love Three Billboards. It was on my top 10 list. I know you guys are fans of it, whether it was on your top 10 list or not. I have noticed within the last 2 weeks or so, a lot of backlash to Three Billboards, people arguing that it is sort of an oversimplification of like racial tension from an outsider's perspective. What an outsider views whenever they see, maybe for lack of a better phrase, Trump's America. And I know that there is a lot of people that I'd argue don't like Three Billboards enough to at least, not, I'm not saying, for, I'd say Frances is very much a contender to win, but I don't think there's as much love there as there is for something like Lady Bird. And I think people might vote for Saoirse just because they liked Lady Bird better.
Frances was the only person that I was sure about when I gave my predictions on.
Really?
She was the only, when I was going through the seven categories that I did on my air in DC, which were the main movie categories plus director, Frances was the only one that I said on the air that I felt I'm going to get this right.
And I think that there's another abrasive female character in Allison Janney in I, Tonya.
Yeah, who supporting, is, though.
Supporting, but I'm saying she's sort of filling that role also of character that you kind of hate, but you can't overlook the fact that it's an incredible performance. It'd be strange if both of them won for playing truly detestable characters. Although I don't know if Frances really qualifies as detestable. The thing about Three Billboards, man, and I just can't get over it. It ends on such a weird note, and I leave that movie just feeling unfulfilled. And people have talked about, like, that's just the way McDonough's movies end, and I get that, but I felt like I endured a lot of that movie for a payoff that just wasn't there. And it just...
Yeah,
I'm disappointed about that movie because of the ending. The ending knocks me out of it.
I like Billboards a lot. I think it's definitely an incredible film. I just don't like. It was weird. Like right when Frances won on Sunday, I knew Billboards was going to win Best Picture. I just knew it. I had a feeling, and again, I didn't predict it, but I don't understand why it's such a front runner. I don't get it, but you know, that's fine. That's where we're at right now.
Let's go to actors. So we have Franco and Gary Oldman, right? And the two of them walk away with Globes. And I thought they both, and this is also, I think, really important in these early award ceremonies, not just the Globes. But when the people get up and give a speech, their speeches are almost being graded, right? Like, are they Oscar worthy? And are they going to run out of things to talk about because they have to often get up at the SAGs and the Critics' Choice? And
remember Jamie Foxx, like his run for Ray, like he kept giving knockout after knockout after knockout speech. And some people say he won the, not saying that he didn't deserve the Oscar, but people say a lot of people voted for him because they wanted to see what he would say whenever he got up on stage.
So with Franco, every time he gets up at an award show, he's going to bring Tommy with him. Right. Yeah. And don't you kind of want to see how that soap opera continues?
I honestly think Franco's done getting up on stage this award season. I think that's the last time he's getting up there.
You think it's Gary Oldman's to win, or you think
I think there's just this, you know, I know, you know, we were talking about career Oscars. By no means is this Gary Oldman's best performance of his career, but there is, I think, such a goodwill for him in Hollywood where there's this idea of he should have won by now. Right. And this is a pretty Oscar-y kind of... I mean, there are three or four moments within that movie that could potentially be his Oscar clip.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think it's... Honestly, I think it's his... There was a moment where I thought maybe he was wavering to Timothy, which I've heard... I've now learned it's not Timothy, it's Timothy, for Call Me By Your Name. But I feel like he... I mean, unless he comes back and wins the SAG, then I still think it's Gary's to win. Okay,
yeah, there was definitely a moment where, like, because Oldman was the lock, like, 2 months ago, no question he was going to win Best Actor. Just even when the picture was released of him as Winston Churchill, that's almost when his campaign started. No one had even seen the movie.
They knew what they were doing when they released that picture.
Exactly. So, yeah, but for some reason, Timothy, or I didn't know his name was pronounced that way either, took some momentum recently, and there was a moment where, when I was doing my predictions the other day, that I was like, I was wavering back and forth between those two. I wasn't sure what was going to happen. But I will say, Oldman, I really despise, though, that like it has to be discussed in a way where he's winning for his possible career. I find that, you know, listen, I mean, like, you guys know True Romance, The Professional, Immortal Beloved, The Fifth Element, and Dracula. Like, those are his best performances, and he wasn't even really considered that I know of or nominated for any of those movies. So I just, you know, seeing him on stage makes me happy. I think back to Drexel and True Romance, one of the greatest performances of all time, you know, The Professional. So I don't think, out of those five, I think he's probably the one that deserves it the most. But you guys know where I stand. I mean, Andy Serkis, to me, is the best performance of the year.
And dude, you got to let go of Serkis, man.
I know it's not going to happen. But the idea that he's not even in conversation still upsets me. Andy Serkis, in my opinion, is the best performance by any actor this year, and it's not even being talked about in War for the Planet of the Apes. So we haven't even gotten to a point yet where it can even be an idea. The Academy still does not understand it.
I feel like he had a little bit of buzz for... Rise, the last one? Whatever the last Planet of the Apes was.
War for the Planet of the Apes.
That was this one.
It was on your top 10. Oh, you mean the one before this?
Yeah. Like, I felt like the second Planet of the Apes, there was almost a borderline Oscar buzz. Dawn.
Why don't they understand? Here's the thing. Fox has done everything they can to release these side-by-side videos, these behind-the-scenes shots.
Even the screener copy was a picture of him.
Andy's on these, like, arm things running around like an ape. He's, like, talking. There you go right there. I don't understand.
Yeah, there it is.
How is that not coming across? And it's literally no different, if in my opinion, harder to do that performance than it is to be on screen. Now I remember Andy saying this in an interview, and I completely agree with him. You look at someone, look at someone like has makeup on their face, for example. He didn't mention Gary Oldman specifically, but look at Gary Oldman, right? Gary Oldman is in full prosthetics and makeup. The only difference between him and Gary Oldman is that Andy's makeup is just done in a computer later on. And so it's digitally added to him. The performance is still underneath everything you're seeing. So, I don't know.
I think, unfortunately,
as terrible as it sounds, and I know I've said this before, I think older Academy members are essentially going to have to kind of either move on or stop caring or maybe die off before we get an Oscar win for someone in motion capture.
We wore a rubber mask.
I feel like it's a younger generation that appreciates motion capture. I don't think you're going to convince enough. I'm not saying that there aren't older Academy members that appreciate this, but I don't think there are enough to give it the win that it, or give it the votes and the support that it's going to need to win.
So, guys, before we move on from actor, I do want to bring up Daniel Day-Lewis because I think this movie Phantom Thread, and I know Sean's been having a hard time seeing it. Jake, I know you saw it. I was having a hard time seeing it, and luckily I caught it in L.A. in 70mm this past week. That performance is amazing.
See, it didn't do as much for me.
Oh, it blew my dude. That I don't want to give anything away, but that final act is nuts. But I just think that Oldman's gonna win it this year. But I am surprised that Day-Lewis isn't having. There's not more of a conversation about him.
Well,
but I don't think enough people have seen that movie.
Okay, so personally, I'll tell you, from the minute that it was nominated, like not even just like a potential, but the minute it nabbed 4 nominations from Critics' Choice, I've been hammering Focus Features. Hey, show this movie. We have 2 BFCA members here in the North Carolina area. I get that I'm in like the field kind of thing, right? But they had their initial push and it worked. They got nominations and now they've just given up on it. I don't understand. I have to sort of attribute it to Paul Thomas Anderson, to the fact that he has a very specific way that he wants it screened. They didn't press screeners for it. Obviously, he did it in 70mm.
I kind of like that, though. I'm actually very much for that. And here's the thing. There's 2 ways to look at what you just said. It's unfortunate for people who might live in different areas who don't have access to a theater like a 70mm theater. But I will say, when you're someone like Paul Thomas Anderson who has a specific way. When I went and saw Phantom Thread in L.A., Paul Thomas Anderson chooses a 30-minute pre-show soundtrack that he plays while you're sitting down to watch his movie. It had Beyonce on. It was very interesting. So you walked... Hey, I'm sorry, dude.
That's a little pretentious, man. I'm sorry.
I don't care.
Awesome. I have to listen to a playlist before I watch someone's movie. Like,
No. You don't have to. The only difference is that instead of a pre-show with Maria Menounos, you have a.
How will I know what's coming to TNT near me?
Yeah, exactly. No, but I will say this: the 70mm projection of Phantom Thread was. I have never heard sound design like that in my entire life. The sound of buttering bread, pouring water, chewing, swallowing, I've never seen anything like that that had that much intensity. So to me, that is a theater experience.
Yeah, but that should be a reward if you have access, not a punishment if you don't. I mean,
I agree.
I'd say Nolan cares more about the quality of his films maybe than any other director working today, and I still got a Dunkirk screener. Like, if I want to watch Dunkirk on my iWatch, I can do it.
I will say, I'm going to go out there, and I don't know this for sure, but there's no way that Nolan was happy about that, about them printing his movie on a DVD and being sent in a screener. There's
but
no
it's going to
way.
Happen. They're, like, no, it's know. Not. It's I not know. Like it, like there wasn't going to be on DVD, and all of a sudden they put it on DVD for us to have a screener. It's no. gonna hit DVD
but,
eventually.
But there's different levels of participation, right? There right. are directors and producers who will do anything in their power to get an award. Then there's Nolan, who's like the B level, who, all right, I'll let you, you can see my movie.
But I feel like he's a little bit more into it this year than he has been.
No, he is, for sure. But then what I think with Paul Thomas Anderson, Paul Thomas Anderson just doesn't care about this. He doesn't want,
I agree.
He doesn't care about the awards. He doesn't want to do the dog and pony circus. And that's totally, that's fine. That's fine.
But that's frustrating for the X number of other people that worked on the film that want to see their film seen. It is not just Paul Thomas Anderson's project. There are a long list of people when that movie's over that want their movie out there. And it's a little unfair that the ego of one person is keeping it from being seen by masses.
But this then begs the question, how much do these awards really matter?
Right.
And that's what it all comes down to, because someone like a Nolan or someone like a Paul Thomas Anderson, I think the idea of winning something would obviously is a cool idea. But I mean, for me, there are so many great films that will never even grace the stage of an Academy Award or a Golden Globe or whatever. And we've had this discussion before, but some of the greatest filmmakers of all time never even won Oscars. So it just comes down to an idea of how much it means, how much it really means.
Well, yeah, I mean, like to me, well, yeah, you're talking about how much it means personally, because I feel like the value of an Oscar is not like, you know, La La Land didn't need to win Best Picture. It had already, made, hundreds of millions of dollars. Before it won and then didn't win. But it means more to a movie like Moonlight, because then maybe the average viewer at home might go, oh, hey, that's that movie that won Best Picture. Let me check it out.
Right. But over the years, though, in the recent years, the films that have won Best Picture, we all can agree, King's Speech and things like that, no one's talking about those movies. The year that King's Speech won Best Picture was the year of Inception and Social Network. Yeah. Two films that people still continually watch, still continually talk about, specifically Inception. Everyone's still breaking down that movie all over the place. But Social Network, for example, spoke to our time. And so to me, it all comes down to an idea of, do these awards even really mean anything in regards to the movies themselves? But I will say, for our jobs and talking about these movies and marketing and the way the studios position these films and having them make more money when the films get nominated, it does matter. So there's a balancing act there, in my opinion.
All right. So let's shift over to the awards that we actually can control to a certain extent. We're not members of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, but the three hosts of this podcast are members of the Broadcast Film Critics Association. And on Thursday on the CW, you will be able to tune in and watch the Critics' Choice Movie Awards, of which we all vote. And so we're going to very quickly go through our categories, and we made early predictions on what we think is going to win. And these are the ones that we think will win. I'll let Kevin talk about the thing that he still wants to win. If you're playing around at home, I'm sure you can probably guess it. Let's start with Best Actress. And Jake and I both said Saoirse Ronan is going to win. Kevin says Frances McDormand. We've kind of talked about this from a Globe's perspective.
I voted for neither.
You voted for neither, but you think Saoirse is going to win it. Can you tell me why?
Yeah, and I think sort of it boils down to sort of my point earlier is that I don't think Billboards has as much support from the critics or even just the general, voting academy in general. There's just this bubbling over of love for Lady Bird, which I think could transfer over into Saoirse winning. And in situations where sometimes, it gets nominated for a bunch of awards and then like wins one, and like that's the award you get. And that's how I feel it's going to be with Saoirse. I think, whether or not you agree, whether or not Laurie Metcalf has a chance at winning supporting actress, I think it's just because people like Lady Bird more than they like Three Billboards.
Well, I want to bring up an interesting point. We had a conversation Monday morning where a group of us on staff were legitimately surprised when Get Out didn't get anything at the Globes. And our movie's editor, movie content director, Jessica Rowden, said, did you guys honestly think that Get Out was going to win? And we were all like, yeah, we thought it had a legitimate shot. And she was like, did you not look around? Like, it's ladies' night, at these award shows. And that's why Lady Bird has a really good shot. That's why Greta Gerwig may be a front runner of some sort. I mean, do you think that there's something to that, that the Me Too movement, especially when we have 2 months of marinating in this, you know, as the nominees come together and the campaigns come together, that a movie like Lady Bird with a worthy film, not them throwing a, oh, this is a female director, we're going to recognize it, but a legit, you know, like Greta Gerwig did a really good job with this movie, that her and Saoirse Ronan and the movie in general could benefit from this movement from that perspective.
That's a good point. It's one I honestly hadn't really super thought of. I mean, like, so we're moving on, like, beyond Best Actress. We're talking about whether or not Lady Bird could win Best Picture.
Well, I guess Ronan in this perspective, and to me, honestly, I just want to say about Saoirse Ronan, I thought she gave the performance of the year. I mean, I loved her in Brooklyn, and I went into Lady Bird thinking it was just going to be an enjoyable coming-of-age comedy drama type thing, and she blew me away with the range that she had and the way that she nailed every aspect of this character. So I love that she's getting the recognition that she's getting. I hope that she wins from this perspective, and I think that the Critics' Choice are going to recognize her. But yes, I do think that Lady Bird's going to get some momentum building around the fact that people want to recognize a female director and a strong female lead.
I think Lady Bird's a very solid film. I just don't get the overwhelming love for that movie. I love coming of age stories. I think the soundtrack's fantastic. I think that Greta Gerwig did a great job. I just don't understand why that film has the front-running aspect that it does. It's definitely one of the better films of 2017, no question, but I don't think it's Best Picture by far.
Did it make anyone's top 10 list on this podcast?
No, it came close for me. It would be it would be 15 in the 15 in the 15 range for sure.
I mean, I'd put it in top 20, but I just don't. I genuinely think that Frances McDormand has this award in the bag, no question.
All right, for actor, all three of us said Gary Oldman. This is for the Critics' Choice that are being given out on the CW on Thursday. We all think Gary Oldman's going to walk away with it. I guess we would be, you know, I think we mentioned this on another episode of the podcast. We have seven nominees in the Best Actor category.
Now, I voted for Gary. Did you guys actually vote for Gary?
I voted for Daniel Kaluuya.
Well, so your vote doesn't matter. Sean, what did you vote for?
Jake Gyllenhaal. So my vote doesn't matter either. But Gyllenhaal in Stronger was incredible.
I will say this, and Gary Oldman is my favorite actor working today, no question. I think he's just absolutely brilliant. My hope is that if he does win in one of his speeches, that he just says thank you to, and then he goes, everyone! that's all I want him to do, is just say thank you to everyone. If he does that...
Yeah, because he has a great sense of humor like this. I could see him actually doing
that. The greatest moment in the history of Oscar speeches if he redoes that.
But the sad part is that there'd be like 8 people that would get it, and 3 of them are on this podcast right now.
I don't know, man. I think The Professional is a bigger movie than you think. That's a great scene.
Let's shift to director really fast, because... these are people that we haven't necessarily spoken in depth about, and I want us to. Kevin and myself both believe that Nolan is going to win a Critics' Choice on Thursday for Dunkirk, and Jake says Guillermo del Toro. And we kind of started this nomination process before the Globes. Jake, do you feel a little more confident now that he took a Globe, or does it not matter?
Yeah, honestly, and I feel like, you know, we were talking a little bit about, like, playing the game. And I just feel like going back to sort of like the love, I think people just love Guillermo del Toro. I think there are people that he's always kind of been sort of a director of the people. He's always just been kind of just one of those guys that you kind of want to see succeed. And I voted for Nolan. I voted for Nolan for Dunkirk, but there's always sort of been a coldness about him. He's never played the Oscars game. I feel like he's maybe made himself more approachable this time around, maybe because he thinks he has a shot, or Warner Brothers is telling me he has a shot. But I just don't think people don't get the warm and fuzzies when he's in the room. And there's just something about people. I think people just kind of want to go up and hug you. I mean, he tweeted that he went to In-N-Out Burger after winning Best Director at the Golden Globes. There's something just every man about that. I mean, I could never see Christopher Nolan won. I could never see him on Twitter, but I could never see him tweeting that he's going to In-N-Out Burger after winning Best Director.
Oh my God, Kevin, what if you saw Nolan Could what you if imagine, Kevin saw Nolan in an In-N-Out burger?
Could you imagine Nolan on Twitter? I can't imagine him tweeting about like going to In-N-Out burger.
He wouldn't let you read his tweets unless you were on like the highest quality phone.
you guys can joke all you want, but that guy can direct a movie, and you guys all know it, and you guys all
dude, if he wins Best Director at the Oscars, I won't be upset about it.
All right, let me say this. So directing category is my favorite category of the Oscars. Only because I just love filmmakers. Everyone loves filmmakers. I just love everyone who's in this category. And Del Toro is, in my opinion, as talented as Christopher Nolan. The only difference between those two guys is that, as you mentioned, Del Toro is more of like his personality is more open. He's more he reminds us of ourselves in regards to the way he talks about films and his passion. Nolan's a very introvert. He's very he doesn't talk. He doesn't have a huge personality. He's very low key. And when we interview him, you know that he talks very low. He's very serious. Del Toro can joke around. That being said, they're both.
That's why the audio in the Nolan movies are so bad.
No, they're not. No, they're not.
Hear anything?
Two. Nolan and Del Toro are two of the greatest filmmakers working today, no question. And Del Toro did masterwork in The Shape of Water. I mean, that film looks like a $100 million film. It was made for $19.5 million. I've told you guys this before, and you guys have all read this in other places, but in case the people who are listening haven't heard this, just the way that he made these scenes work was mind-blowing. And we've discussed the dry for wet element of what he did in those scenes and filming these scenes that are not really underwater, but using wires and actors on ropes and pantomiming and smoke machines and projectors to make it look like they were underwater. That stuff is really cool and effective. Nolan, though, man, that is a director's movie. Everything about that film is a director's. He is telling a story with minimal dialogue, brilliant camera work, cameras strapped to Spitfire aircrafts, large format cameras. It is the most immersive experience I've ever had in a movie theater in my life. So those two guys, in my opinion, are the most deserving, no question.
Yeah, and I'm not discounting what they did, but I just think that personality is going to play a part into it. And I just don't think that, unfortunately, like I said, I voted for Nolan. I just don't think Nolan's played the game enough this year. And I think right now, I think Guillermo del Toro sort of is pulling on the heartstrings for people.
Do you think that's why people like Kubrick and Hitchcock and all those guys never won, because they didn't play the game?
Yes.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, did the game exist then, though?
I don't know, but
to
like
a certain extent, sure.
But you got to think about someone like a Stanley Kubrick. Could you?
I mean, you can't. I can't foresee Kubrick going around shaking hands, kissing babies.
Right. I can't imagine
to win Oscars.
Kubrick going to parties and trying to win an Oscar. I mean, clearly he deserved it for 2001 and Dr. Strangelove and The Shining and everything he's done. But Kubrick kind of reminds me of Nolan in the sense that they're not really these outgoing type of people who I think are going to try and campaign for an Oscar. They'll be there, they'll show up. I mean, famously, didn't Brando not even show up for his award? Like, someone accepted his Oscar?
Well, he was making a political statement.
Right. I'm just saying, but Brando also didn't seem like he was that type of person either that would, like, play the game, from what I...
Yeah, but was he there? Did he accept... Did he won for On the Waterfront, didn't he? Did he accept for that?
I don't remember.
I think he might have accepted for that first
one. I don't think it was a matter of him not caring about the Oscars game. I think he was trying to make a political statement, during the 70s.
Yeah.
Well, so, and in a year where there isn't a clear-cut frontrunner, where the picture and director would sort of match up. This feels like the year where they will sort of acknowledge somebody in the director category, but then go in a different direction with picture.
Yeah,
and initially I thought, before everything started to sort of take shape, I thought, well, they'll give it to Nolan so that Nolan gets his directing Oscar, which we all say he deserves and probably should have won earlier, and deserves it for Dunkirk. He did an amazing job. And then earlier, I thought it was like The Post maybe potentially winning, where it's like timely and people embrace it, but that hasn't happened. So now I'm almost thinking that they recognize Del Toro in the director category as, again, because I think any filmmaker, and especially Critics' Choice may sort of dictate this too, because we're all sort of film critics who watch a ton of things. If a filmmaker sits down to watch Shape of Water, yes, they're getting caught up in the romance of it, but they're looking to how he shot it. And everything is just like, oh my God, that looks beautiful. Holy shit, that's amazing. Look at this performance. That's incredible. Like, all of the pieces of it stand out, even though they all still blend perfectly together. And I think that they're prone to sort of recognize Del Toro from that perspective and then maybe give picture to something else that is just sort of, you know, widely loved.
Not to the degree of La La Land, but Shape of Water is still a love letter to movies of a bygone era.
Monster
and if
films.
We know anything, the Academy loves movies about movies or movies that pay tribute to movies or movies that sort of pay tribute to an era of Hollywood. Case in point, The Artist, a Best Picture winner that no one is talking about anymore. I'm not saying people aren't going to talk about Shape of Water, but I'm just saying I think Shape of Water paying tribute to those old Universal monster movies kind of helps it out because people that are in love with that era will sort of might give it the edge. Dunkirk is a cold film. Say what you want to about it. It doesn't have that,
but it's
emotional connection.
It's meant to be a cold film.
I'm not saying that. I don't mean that as a criticism, but some people, I think some people do look at that as a bad thing.
But it's interesting because Dunkirk is everything. Dunkirk is the opposite of what moviegoers expect to see in a movie theater. Dunkirk is a gigantic independent movie. And it's essentially a film that requires, like, people want to go into a war movie and they want certain things that they're going to get from every particular war film. You want a backstory to these characters. You want to learn about them. You want to see them riding home to their loved ones. You want to make sure that they get to safety and get home to, which is totally fine. But Nolan kind of threw that all out. I will say, now that the Golden Globes have happened, and I think Del Toro is going to win the Oscar. Putting Dunkirk aside, my personal feelings on the film, I just don't see Nolan winning now, unfortunately. So
would you change your vote for Thursday?
Oh, no, I voted for Nolan.
I voted for Nolan too, but who do you think is going to win on Thursday?
At Critics' Choice?
Yeah.
I think Nolan's going to win.
You said Nolan.
I think Nolan will win Critics' Choice. I think Del Toro wins the Oscar.
Ooh, interesting.
And I will say this, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with Del Toro winning the Oscar. And we all saw his passionate speech. That moment when he told them to stop playing the music, he's waited 25 years for this moment. That guy is a phenomenal filmmaker. And every little detail of this movie, The Shape of Water, you can say the same thing about Jordan Peele's Get Out. There are little things in there that are just beautiful and attention to detail. Look at every single thing in The Shape of Water. The soap is green. The candy that Michael Shannon's eating is green. The tile on the wall is green. Every little thing Del Toro thought about. And even if you don't notice it as a viewer, it's still encompassing your mind and taking you into this world that Del Toro created. So I'm okay with him winning. I think it's a great film, and I'm okay with it.
Why do you think he wins Critics' Choice but loses Oscar?
I have a feeling that the critics, it's a good question. I don't know why I feel that way, but I think he wins Critics' Choice.
I hope you're right. Like I said, I voted for Nolan, so I hope to be wrong in that regard.
And a statistic that I read and I'm stealing, if Del Toro wins Best Director at the Oscars, that would mean 4 of the last 5 wins have come from those three, the big three Mexican filmmakers.
Yeah.
Cuarón and Iñárritu, who won it twice. Shouldn't have won it for Birdman, but definitely for Revenant.
What? Birdman was amazing.
Yeah, dude. I don't know, man. Wait, who was he up against for Birdman?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Dude,
he was, you know who he was up against? Boyhood.
Tom Hooper. No, I don't know.
Oh, God. Who's my Texas boy from Boyhood?
Linklater didn't win?
Yeah. Linklater lost, dude.
Oh, wow. You know, I will say this. I mean, listen, if you can make a 2-hour film look like one shot and pull that off, I mean, that's pretty.
Yeah,
I think he
deserved.
I think
it would be a good movie, though.
I will say this.
Oh, I like Birdman.
Me too. Linklater, by the way, I will say this, though. As a director,
he only shot the one movie over the course of 20-something years. Come on.
I think Linklater should have won, and here's why. The whole point of a director is to tell a story. The cinematographer is the one that makes the shot look the way it does. So, you know, a lot of people will think about the way a movie is shot, and they think automatically about the director. But that's really the cinematographer. I mean, the director obviously chooses the shots and approves the shots. But it's, you know, when you see lighting on camera or a camera angle, that's the cinematographer setting that up and doing that shot. The job.
I think the director does have a like.
I'm not saying he doesn't. What I'm saying is, but like when Spielberg is directing a movie, Kaminsky sets the shot up, and then Spielberg obviously approves the shot. But Kaminsky's the one lighting the shot, getting it set up, angling the shot, pulling the shot off. You know, so to me, Linklater told a story and kept the consistency of a story for so many years that he did his job as a director. So in my opinion, he was the better director that year. I would argue that Chivo, who shot Birdman, that's the real star of that movie.
So we all said Shape of Water is going to win Best Picture at Critics' Choice. I guess we'd all be stunned if something else walks away. But at the same time, the way that this season is sort of mapping itself out, I think if every sort of guild or major organization, Critics' Choice being one of them, goes with a different direction and doesn't help us map out the Oscar race, I wouldn't be completely shocked. But right now, I'm putting my money behind Shape.
Yeah,
I think.
But, I mean, this is I think one of the most exciting sort of awards seasons in recent memory, in the sense that, I mean, granted, I say, oh yeah, we're 2 months away from the Oscars. If the Oscars were sooner, I mean, this would be pretty far along into the Oscar race without having any kind of a frontrunner. Even if Shape of Water wins from us, I wouldn't say it's a done deal.
Right.
Yeah,
I would agree.
I just really, I'm really hoping, just personally, that Nolan wins director, and then picture can go to anything. Like I understand Dunkirk's not gonna win Best Picture, even though I it's my favorite movie of 2017. But I don't see that winning. And as Jake said, a lot of people feel that it's a cold film. So I don't know. I just, my hope is that Nolan wins, but right now I'm kind of leaning more towards Del Toro, because I think Del Toro, just as Jake said, I don't think this should be the reasoning for it, but he's a very likable guy. He really shows his passion visually, the way he speaks, the way he talks. Nolan, in my opinion, just delivers his passion through his work. So it does become a little bit of a game in political as to
it's like a battle of like heart and brain. Right. Like, what's going to win? Is the brain going to win, or is the heart going to win?
Right.
So here are Best Picture nominees that, to me, all of a sudden, are not part of the conversation in any way, shape, or form. The Big Sick, you know, happy to be nominated. It feels like Call Me by Your Name. For a little while,
that
it felt like
went
Call
down
Me by
fast.
Your Name. Yeah, it felt like it had the potential to be a front runner. It has an extremely passionate fan base online. If you mention Call Me by Your Name on Twitter, you're either A, going to pick up 100 followers overnight, or you're going to wake up to a million mentions because you said something bad about it. Like, they love that movie. This movie is beloved, but it's not breaking through in any of these categories. And I'm a little bit surprised. I'm not saying that it's one of the best movies of the year, but I'm a little bit surprised that it's sort of fallen off. The Florida Project, which you guys know I love, made my top 10. It's not cracking anything. No, I know Kevin didn't like it all that much.
I mean, I wasn't just particularly crazy about it. I don't get the Willem Dafoe love.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I'm with Jake. I don't the Willem Dafoe love. I want.
And I love Willem Dafoe.
Me too, man. Hey, we all know he should have won for the Boondock Saints. It's Armageddon. You know, anyways, but anyway, I do think that no. The line was
there was a firefight.
Anyways,
I was like, I don't think that was right the first time.
He does say Armageddon. He does say something Armageddon, and then he says there was a firefight. It was Armageddon.
Is that when Ben Affleck puts animal crackers on his stomach?
No,
that's exactly right.
No, there was a firefight. It's one of the best. That's the scene when he's like in with the shooters and like doing all the scene. That was cool. Admittedly, I'm ADD, so give me a second here. The line is, this place was Armageddon. There was a firefight. Anyways.
We got there.
I don't get the Dafoe love either.
Worth it.
By the way, I just did that line for Willem Dafoe when I interviewed him for Murder on the Orient Express, and I think he thought I was crazy.
I'm not gonna lie, I saw that interview and thought you were crazy.
I was like, there was
and
a
I know you.
And
it gets better every single time.
I know. Anyways, so.
And so the other one that's not getting any love is Get Out, and that's what I'm getting around to. I'm bringing us around to Jordan Peele's movie Get Out, which, you know, it didn't escape the Golden Globes unscathed. We mentioned how we thought it would pick up some momentum. If it were to pick up some awards at Critics' Choice, do you guys think it's right back in the conversation? Do you feel like this is a week-to-week type thing where Get Out might be in and out, and it's not until we get the nomination, the Oscar nominations on, I want to say it's January 23rd, that we finally know whether it's in or out and how much can it do?
I think it's in. I don't think it's a question as to whether or not it's in. I mean, if we're talking, but are we talking about, like, is it going to be nominated, or are we talking about is it going to win? Because I think it has, I think it's guaranteed in nomination. I just don't think it has a chance to win best. Unless, I mean, how did it do it? Unless it, like, pulls a SAG surprise.
It has.
Like a Johnny Depp winning best actor for Pirates.
It has.
I mean, unless it pulls that off. Because it's not going to win from us.
I think Get Out is going to be nominated, but not win anything crazy. Yeah. I think the only thing Get Out would win
screenplay, maybe?
Would be screenplay, original screenplay.
Yeah.
And I think, and
even that's a tough category this year.
But rightfully so. Jordan Peele's screenplay is perfect. And we've all, and anybody who's watched Get Out multiple times, you know that there's little details you pick up on every time
there
you watch
it. There are no wasted lines.
No, every single line is means something. I'm actually upset that Allison Williams isn't more part of the conversation. And I think that Daniel Kaluuya is obviously amazing in the film, but you can't talk about why Allison's great without giving away the spoiler.
Yeah, but like, she doesn't have, like, that moment. Like, what is her... Okay, like, we were talking earlier today that, like, Daniel is when he's in the chair and all of a sudden the tears start streaming down his eyes. Like, when is Allison's moment?
Oh, I think her moment's the whole movie. I think that there is pure evil lurking in that character, and it is unbelievable. When you go back and watch it the second and third time and you pay attention to every moment of the way she smiles, the way she blinks, the way she smirks, there are so many. Just watch the movie and watch her the whole time. It is insane, like, how good she is. Now, I know it's not going to happen, but getting back to Get Out, I think definitely nominations in Best Picture, Best Screenplay.
It got a SAG award.
Yeah, it'll get nominated. No question. It got SAG nominated in the ensemble category. It is going to be part of the Oscar race. Is it going to win anything above the line, as Jake says? I don't think so.
I saw Catherine Keener got nominated for something, and I just rewatched that movie, and it's one of those deals where, like, I just thought she was just playing Catherine Keener. Like, she doesn't have a really big standout role. It's like Octavia Spencer in Shape of Water.
Yeah.
She's kind of just playing Octavia Spencer.
Yeah. Know?
Like, there's names that are getting carried along with popular movies that I'm kind of like, that slot could go to somebody else.
Yeah, I mean,
be heartbroken.
Get Out, really, when it all comes down to it, it's Daniel and Allison. And even Bradley Whitford's so great in that movie. And Bradley Whitford's great in The Post as well. I'm just happy that Get Out is, we're talking about it. Because there was a fear that at the beginning of the year, when that film hit and it was so great, that's my number two of the year, that it was going to be forgotten because of when it came out. So honestly, that movie getting nominated is a win already. It was a huge box office success, even though box office I don't think means quality. I'm just happy it did really well. So Jordan Peele's name.
Like, for that movie, everything that it's getting now feels like gravy. Like, for
I
so
agree.
Many of these movies, it needs the Oscar momentum to build up an audience and to hopefully pad its box office, you know, and to justify the fact, like, for Get Out, it's already justified the fact that they made it, and it's established Jordan Peele, and it's established the cast that didn't necessarily need to be established already.
Daniel could have used the help, though. I mean, like, I mean, you know, I think he most benefits from this, but aside from Jordan Peele, I mean, Allison Williams she already had Girls. Catherine Keener and Bradley, like, already had, you know, Bradley, he's one of, like, four or five actors that are in, like, two or three or four Best Picture contenders this year.
It's like him and Michael Stahlberg, who are, like, in every movie ever made.
And Timothy is in Call Me By Your Name and Lady Bird. Who's Lucas Hedges?
Yeah.
Is in Three Billboards and Lady Bird. Tracy Letts
is in The Post and Lady Bird.
And we now know the topic of next week's awards blend.
Yeah. I
all
think
the double dippers.
Daniel, though, I think, I don't think he needs the Oscar or the nomination. I think, you know, he's going to be in Black Panther. The guy's career is now great. I mean, that movie, but I will say, if he's nominated, and I texted you guys this today, I would love to see that clip shown on the Oscars when they talk about him, just him in that chair, breaking down, eyes wide open, tears coming down his face. You have to you have to think about that for a moment as an actor, where you go to get there, where you go to do that scene. That scene in general is, in my opinion, is his nomination. That is a phenomenal
That's
scene.
Fair. Well, I mean, he wouldn't be the first actor that won off of one scene.
Yeah, but he's great
like
the
Sean
whole movie.
And Mystic River.
Yeah, that's true. Mystic River's great, though. That's the best. That's definitely the best Eastwood movie ever that he directed, in my opinion. But
I mean, I'm saying, like, that the last time that we met and talked about Get
it's
Out,
not Unforgiven,
Kevin
Jake.
Was saying,
it's not Unforgiven.
Kevin was saying that, like, he would like to see Jordan Peele in the director category.
Yes.
And it just feels like
I think he has a shot.
Really? All right.
But he was shot for sure.
It just feels like this is going to be one of those movies that, like, from week to week, the needle points in a different direction.
Because
legit chances.
Like, last week, I thought for some reason, even though nothing particularly changed for Get Out, because I didn't think Get Out had a massive chance at the Golden Globes, but it felt different last week for Get Out than it feels this week, and it might feel different next week for Shape of Water, or it might feel different next week for
Get Out. By the way, is a film that benefits from how good the director is. And I know it sounds weird because most films should have that type of element to it, but Get Out is you feel Jordan Peele's voice the entire movie. So you know if it's I think he definitely deserves to get nominated. I don't know that he will. Get Out is a very different movie. It's not a film that I don't know. Can you see the Academy voters embracing Jordan Peele as best director? I would hope so, but can you see it happening?
No, I can't at all. And in fact, I think a lot of them are going to give it a chance. And like elements like Rod, the TSA guy, who as brilliant as he is,
right?
They're going to be like, I can't take this movie seriously.
Well, because that makes it seem a little bit more mainstream horror than Academy.
But
yeah.
Rod is, as Jordan Peele has said, Rod is the audience.
He's the audience, right? Completely.
He's the guy that when you're watching that movie, he's the guy like, you know, when you're in the audience, you're saying, don't go in there, don't do this.
Yeah, but I'd argue that most Academy movies don't have the audience character in them. Like, right. there is no guy in Dunkirk saying, like, look at that plane.
No. I understand, but I
Dunkirk needs that.
Yeah.
Okay, that should be Kevin. Kevin should have played that part.
He
should have been the fourth storyline.
If I could be on that set, my storyline would be Kevin, 1 hour and 47 minutes. No, but I think that, I'm just happy Get Out's part of our conversation. It's one of the best films of the year. And if people who are watching our show or listening to our show right now, give Get Out a second and a third viewing.
I will say it is much better on the second viewing and third viewing. And you know, we mentioned No Wasted Lines.
Yeah.
Maybe my favorite screenplay of the year, simply because it fooled me as to how good it was. I thought it was a simple screenplay the first time.
One scene I'll mention before we move on. When you rewatch the movie, and Jake knows this, rewatch the dialogue that Daniel and Bradley Whitford have when they first arrive at the house as they're walking by the photos of Jesse Owens. And they talk about his father losing in the Olympics. Listen to every single line in that moment that Bradley says. Like, there are things in there that...
Well, my favorite one is when he asks them what's in the basement, and he goes, oh, just some black mold.
Yeah, I mean...
brilliant line when you know what the movie's about.
So the first time you see it, you hear that line, and you literally think black mold. Like, as in there's mold in the basement. And you have no idea what he's talking about. But then, like, that is literally a perfect example. And then going back to Allison, for example, there's a scene when they're all at the party and they're getting ready to choose who's going to choose Daniel's character. And there's a moment, I believe we discussed this in the show at one point, but there's a moment where this woman comes up to Daniel and grabs his arm and he's talking about how strong he is. And Allison literally stops and looks at the woman and says, you're going too far. Like, you're going to give us away if you keep doing this.
Well, no, because she asks Allison if sex with a black man is different.
Right. But she's
but
like...
when you know what's going to happen, she's asking because her husband's about to be put into this guy.
Right. But Allison looks like this. She's like you're going to give us away. Like that's too far. So it's almost...
It reminded me of, like, the when you go back and watch Sixth Sense for the second time, and you realize the entire movie they're telling you that Bruce Willis is dead.
Dude, when you watch the Bruce Willis scene when he's at dinner with his wife, and the first time you saw that movie, you don't even think to think to yourself. Yeah. They never even say anything to each other. Like, that's the level. And even when Sixth Sense came out, people were comparing Shyamalan to a modern-day Hitchcock. I legitimately would put Peele in that category, especially with his first
movie. Well, let's see what he does.
I'm not saying from here on out. I'm not saying he's Hitchcock level. I'm saying that I think he's breaking into that realm where he's making work that even Hitchcock would have looked at and went, "That's really good." That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
All right, we're gonna have plenty of time to break down all of these movies, and I think if Get Out picks up a bunch of Oscar nominations, it's gonna be right back in the conversation. I would not be surprised if it becomes that kind of movie. So before we wrap this episode up, we're not only gonna talk about awards on the Awards Blend show, and I know that it's called Awards Blend, and we may actually change the title. the title at some point, even though we have a spiffy new logo and all that. But we want to reserve some time in each of these episodes to talk about bigger picture movies. And it's 2018 and we're brand new to the year. And so what we did was the three of us looked ahead to the calendar year and tried to pick. We played a little game where we said, if we could only see one movie or just remove every other movie off the calendar, and we were told we can only watch one movie this year, what is the movie that we would choose to see in a theater? And I think that makes a big difference because we all three of us went with blockbusters. I'm going to go first because you guys stole the two that I would have picked. So because of that, I went with Mission Impossible 6.
Which surprised me.
Well, from this perspective, it's that cast staying together and coming off of Rogue Nation, which I think is just such an incredible and satisfying Tom Cruise movie. And I think Cruise obviously is one of the best action stars. He delivers ever. Every single time. But if you're telling me who I want to bet on going into any summer blockbuster season, it's Christopher McQuarrie. Like, Christopher McQuarrie is a genius.
I agree.
And the fact that he even wants to play in these sandboxes that many dismiss as, you know, oh, just empty, vapid special effects blockbusters, he makes incredibly smart tent poles that are propped up by some of the most amazing set pieces. And I know he didn't do Ghost Protocol, but, like, he took what Brad Bird did on the Burj Khalifa, and he was basically like, I'm going to one-up you multiple times. And that's what the Mission Impossible series has become. It's like, we always have to keep topping what you just did. And if McQuarrie's trying to top McQuarrie, sign me up for that. I'm in 100%.
Okay, Sean, I'm gonna tell you something, and it's going to upset you. The fact that McQuarrie is directing Mission Impossible 6 is kind of what makes me not very excited about it.
Why?
I think he's a great director. I thought he killed it with Mission Impossible 5. But one of the things I have loved about the series, whether it was on purpose or perhaps even accidental on purpose, is that each one was directed by a different person.
Sure.
So every Mission Impossible felt different. Right. John Woo's Mission Impossible 2 feels different than De Palma's 1, than Abrams 3, or Brad Bird's 4. And I feel like this is going to be the first time that a Mission Impossible feels like a Mission Impossible we've seen before. And that kind of bums me out.
I would rather
a new director come in, give me something completely different, and maybe not even have it be as good. But I love that each one was directed by someone different. I'm disappointed that a director's coming back.
I would argue that Ghost Protocol didn't... I don't know what a Brad Bird film was supposed to feel like. I mean, like, I think that JJ was all over that movie, in my opinion. I mean, I think what JJ did with... Mission Impossible 3 was my favorite one until Ghost Protocol, and they've gotten better and better since. I mean, I don't even like Mission Impossible 1. I think Mission Impossible 1 is boring.
It's just different movie.
It's a boring film, in my opinion. I think John Woo's Mission Impossible 2 is one of those guilty pleasures. I love watching the doves and everything, whatever it is. But moving into 3, JJ's film, in my opinion, like, okay, so Sean, you mentioned the action set pieces. So look at 3. One of the best action scenes ever is when that bridge gets missiled. And then he flies back into that car. Amazing scene.
Yeah.
4, you have the Burj Khalifa. 5, you have the airplane sequence, which is a mind-blowing scene. But you have to understand that, like, Tom Cruise is... that's exactly what audiences deserve. Practical effects, practical action, actors doing their own stunts. I am so excited about McQuarrie taking on 6. And I get Jake's point.
But I see Jake's point. I understand Jake's point.
Yeah.
I can't argue about the fact that it's fun when I'm not denying that he's great,
and it's probably going to be a great movie. But when I walk out, I know part of me is going to go, I wonder what a different director might have done.
I mean, listen, all right, Kevin, I'm all about that. But I will say this, people out there listening, if you haven't seen The Way of the Gun, watch it. It's one of my...
Yeah, the first... 10 minutes are great.
Oh my god, that movie is so... Oh, how about the scene?
About sound design. The sound design of that movie?
Dude, about the scene when they're getting out of the car and it's rolling through the alley and they're having that shootout? Dude, that McQuarrie, I think Singer might have produced that, but that was like, cuz McQuarrie had written Usual Suspects, right? And then
Is that right?
And then he directed Way of the Gun, and then his career just exploded. Way of the Gun was, if you haven't seen it, definitely see it.
All right, the king of practical effects, Kevin McCarthy, who champions film and the downplaying of CGI, chose... Kevin, what's your 2018? If you could only see one movie in 2018, you chose...
Ready Player One, no question. And here's the thing. I'm a massive practical effect fan. You guys know that. I think that CGI should only be used when it has to be used. I mean, like, someone like Christopher Nolan does CGI perfectly. Like you look at, if you open up the app Paint on your computer, and CGI is a certain thing you can use just to help fill in your picture. That's what I think filmmakers like Nolan and they use it in a way where they only have to use it when they have to. So Spielberg has a task here where obviously you can't make Ready Player One fully practical. It's not possible considering the world that the Oasis creates. Ernest Cline's book is one of my favorite books ever. I love that book. I am anticipating it for one reason only. How the heck is he going to pull this off? That's my question.
Right.
How do you make that book into a movie? And I think the only...
Explain to people why you're saying that. Because the big point being is that this movie features characters from movies over the last 30 years of pop culture.
Right, and it's fully virtual reality most of the time. Right. I mean, this Ty Sheridan's character is going to be wearing a virtual reality headset and going into this world. Now, the interesting thing about the book is that it features some of the most iconic film references of all time. War Games, Blade Runner.
It features Spielberg references.
Right, which, by the way, I've heard they're
going to... Like Jaws? Is Jaws mentioned?
Yeah, they're going to take those out from what I understand.
They mentioned like Raiders.
Yeah, I think they're going to... Well, they also mentioned how bad Indiana Jones 4 was. What are you guys What are you guys smiling about? Are you guys messaging each other? What are you all smiling about?
No.
I made a Jaws joke. I slipped a Jaws joke.
Yeah.
Anyways.
I still think I got it. All right.
Ready Player
One. Anyway. No, I think it's going to be awesome.
If we were to trade our movies, Kevin and I think that we would sacrifice our movie. Kevin, maybe I'm wrong. I would sacrifice mine in a heartbeat to get to Jake's movie.
Because Kevin chose first, so I think Kevin's happy with his
movie. Wait. What is Jake's movie?
Jake chose.
I chose Avengers: Infinity War.
See, I'm excited about that movie, but I honestly, if I there's five other films I'd see before Infinity War.
Oh, really?
I disagree.
I would see.
I just feel like this is a sequel that we've been waiting 10 years for. We've waited what 24 movies?
Yeah.
And we've got not slogged through. 18. It's not like we've been punished 18. That we've gone through to get to this.
Right.
And it shocks me that there is a year where a Star Wars movie is coming out, and it's not the one that's my pick. But I just feel like this is what it's all about. Like, and one of my major complaints about Marvel movies is that the stakes never really felt real. I never walked into a Thor movie or an Iron Man movie or a Captain America movie and wondered if they were going to make it out on the other side alive.
Right.
And this is the first time that's happening for me. Obviously, we know that a lot of these actors are wrapping up these playing these characters. And that, you know, especially with the buying of Fox properties, we're moving into other Marvel worlds. So this is the first time where I'm walking into a Marvel movie going, some of these guys might not make it out. And because we have built our relationships with a lot of these characters over the last 10 years, there's just a weight to this, unlike any other superhero movie I can remember in years past.
Two things. First of all, I am more excited about Black Panther than Avengers: Infinity War by no question. First of all, let me explain this for a second.
That's crazy talk.
Infinity War, we've already seen.
That's crazy.
We already saw it. It was called Captain America: Civil War. We've already seen. Let me explain two things here.
No.
The Russo brothers are the best thing.
Are amazing.
The Russo brothers are the best thing that ever happened to Marvel. They have made the best films in the MCU. Civil War and Winter Soldier. No question.
I'd argue Robert Downey Jr. is the best thing to happen. Or maybe Stan Lee is the best thing to happen to Marvel.
I'm talking about the movie universe, MCU.
Okay, then I'd argue Robert Downey Jr. is the best thing to happen.
I get his point.
I get what you're saying.
My point is, the Russo brothers, don't get me wrong, Avengers: Infinity War is in my top five most anticipated films of 2018, no question.
Right.
But there are four films that I would put ahead of it that I can't wait to see over it. And one of those is Black Panther. And I think Panther I'm excited about because Coogler is an exciting filmmaker. I'm excited to see what he does with a massive budget. A trailer looks amazing. I'm a big Kendrick Lamar fan. I'm excited to see how he curates the soundtrack. I feel like Infinity War is... I can already in my mind expect what I'm going to see. And listen, I love Civil War. I love Winter Soldier. But it's almost to Jake's point about walking into another Macquarie MI6. I feel like I've already seen the Russos do an Avengers film, which, in my opinion, was Civil War. It was essentially an Avengers movie. It was better than anything Whedon did with Avengers 1 and 2. And I just, I don't know. I'm excited about it, but I don't feel that level of, like, it's my number one. My number one needs to be something that I if I don't see it, I'm going to be devastated. I think that has to be, for me, Ready Player One or Black Panther or even Damien Chazelle's new movie, First Man. I mean, there's so many films that I'm
but
more...
But none of us picked Solo. That's a bummer.
Here's why. No, I saw not, an article. I'm I saw. Not. I think I saw an article today. It might have been Cinema Blend about Star Wars fatigue. And first of all, Jedi was not great. So I also am very upset that Miller and Lord were taken away from the picture because they were the reason why I was excited about a Han Solo film. Ron Howard is a very safe filmmaker, and I love Ron Howard. I absolutely love A Beautiful Mind. I think he's a brilliant filmmaker. But Ron Howard's Star Wars movie, I haven't seen it, so I can't. This is just an opinion. I think it's going to be a very safe and by the numbers Star Wars movie, in my opinion.
Well, what I don't understand is they removed Lord and Miller because they were making Solo too funny.
Right.
But Last Jedi is littered with really juvenile humor that kind of ruined the movie for me.
I agree.
What movie were they making so that it was too funny for Lucasfilm?
But Han Solo is such a... it's dry humor. He always has had that dry humor. Han Solo and Indiana Jones are essentially the same person in regards to like just the personality, the way they speak. That's just my opinion. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but I think that Miller and Lord's Han Solo is so much more anticipated to me. Those guys are unique. They have a voice. 21 Jump Street and Meatballs and whatever the movies they've ever done, there's something special about what they do with comedy and the way they write it and the way they direct it. And I would love to have seen Emilia Clarke under a Lord and Miller direction or Woody Harrelson under those. Yeah. So I think Solo...
It concerns me deeply that we're 4 months away and we haven't seen... Like, the only photo that's still official still has Lord Miller in it.
Yeah.
Like, I know.
Yeah. I mean, but I have a feeling that by the next episode of this we do, a trailer will be released.
Interesting.
But I will say...
I think a trailer will... I'd go as far as saying I think a trailer will be released this week.
But let me... I can see that. Now, let me say one more thing going back to Infinity War. I did my top five anticipated the other day. I love MCU. I'm very excited about that movie, and I don't want it to come across as I'm not excited about it. I can't wait to see it. I will be first in line.
You know that's how the internet's going to interpret what you're saying, right?
Fine.
Like that's what the internet
Kevin
does.
Hates Marvel.
But
Kevin hates Marvel.
I can't believe. First of all, I can't believe. And considering that Winter Soldier and Civil War are my two favorite films in the MCU, I am a little wondering why I'm not as excited about it as you guys are. But Black Panther seems new. It seems exciting. I'm excited to see what this 30-year-old filmmaker, Ryan Coogler, brings to the MCU and brings to the table, and it's going to have a different voice. It's going to have a different vibe. I just feel like we've already seen the Russo's Avengers movie. Very similar to what Jake said about Macquarie.
I get what you're saying.
I'm sure we're going to review Black Panther when it comes out, because that comes out in
February. Are you guys not excited about Panther? Are you guys excited about it?
No, I'm excited about Black Panther, but not on the same level that...
Really?
Like I said, you know, like there won't be as much weight for me. I mean, the reason Civil War is my favorite Marvel movie is because to me it has the most emotional weight, and to me Infinity War has the potential to take that and then multiply it by actually killing off characters.
But I would argue that Winter Soldier is better than Civil War. I think Winter Soldier to me was the most stripped down. That scene on the bridge was like. It reminded me of like watching Michael Mann's shootout in Heat with that bank shootout. Like that Winter Soldier to me was the most out of all the MCU films was the one that transcended the genre the most. It stepped outside of, in my opinion, what the Marvel universe seems a bit.
Civil War didn't need to though.
I'm not saying it didn't need to. I just don't think... I love Civil War. It was a 5 out of 5. It was an amazing movie. That airport scene, the 17-minute sequence, is one of the greatest action scenes of all time. No question. I just... I don't know. Infinity War is...
I mean, we're also splitting hairs, because I'd also put Winter Soldier in my top five. So, you know, you know.
Hey, Sean, you're a big MCU guy. Is Infinity War your number one, without choosing the three we have here, is that your number one of the year, most anticipated?
It is. Yeah, it is, because from this perspective, I don't think we've ever seen an experiment like the MCU before in our industry. And you see other examples of people trying to do something similar and falling on their faces. We're looking at Warner Brothers in DC proving how difficult it is. We're looking at the Star Wars franchise, looking how difficult it is to maintain interest. And you're talking about 17 movies where if you looked at the body of MCU movies and you tried to pick one that's bad, you're still talking about a 3 out of 5 movie. And it's ridiculous the number of filmmakers that have come through and the characters that they juggled. It's like trying to maintain all these spinning plates. And to me, the fact that they're about to stick the landing is dumbfounding.
I didn't love
10 years ago.
I'm totally curious.
Why I think Infinity War sort of encapsulates everything I'm excited about. 10 years ago, we got an Iron Man movie, and we're excited that there was a cameo with Nick Fury, after the credits. Now, flash forward 10 years later, we're getting an Avengers movie where Thanos comes out and punches Spider-Man in the face. Look how far we have come in 10
Dude,
years.
I'm excited. I can't wait to see Brolin this day. I'm very excited about Infinity War. I will say, though, that the idea that you talk about characters being killed off, we've seen DC do that, and I'm not saying DC is anywhere near the same realm as MCU. I don't know. Marvel, to me, I think Panther's the one that I think is gonna push it further. It's gonna change the vibe. That's why I'm excited about
it. I fear saying something is going to blow this conversation up and we have to wrap it up, but I didn't really like Creed. So more on that in the episode.
Oh, you are insane.
So here's the deal. This is Awards Blend, and my name is Sean O'Connell. I'm the managing editor here at Cinema Blend. I am joined by Jake Hamilton and Kevin McCarthy. You can find us on social media. We were promoting the show leading into this week's episode. We will promote the show on social media leading into all of the episodes. But you can find Jake Hamilton, the entertainment reporter for Fox 32 in Chicago. He is at Jake's Takes. Kevin McCarthy is the entertainment reporter for Fox 5 in DC, and he is at Kevin McCarthy TV. And I am Sean _ O'Connell, because there is a mixed martial arts fighter who has a bigger following than I do. So we want you guys to reach out to us on Twitter, on social media. Please, we go over to our iTunes page, subscribe to us, because we're going to be uploading all the audio there. You can rate the show. You can drop comments. Give us reviews on iTunes. That means an awful lot to us. That's the way to grow the show. So if you liked what you have heard or watched, please comment. You can comment in the YouTube section down below. Most importantly, we want everybody to come back next week. We're going to be doing these live. They're also going to be archived, but we really want people to come in and participate in the live show, because eventually we're playing around with different software that's going to let people submit questions to us in the middle of the show, and we'll be able to sort of, have you guys sort of direct where the show might go and suggest some topics that we can dive into. We're going to be back together on Wednesday, January 17th, where we're going to be talking about the results of Critics' Choice and predicting ahead, because then we only have one more show before the Academy Awards give out their nominations. So we will be back live on Wednesday, January 17th. I believe that works for all of us, and that's what we have.
Day before my birthday.
Promote that on social media. We're going to have a cake for Jake, obviously, because he's turning the... I don't even want to say what you're saying, because I don't want to say... You might. You
go
might
ahead.
Want
big
people think that
big,
you're
big 3-0,
you're
baby. Big
3-0. I love it. Yeah.
No. I will say.
Great for 50.
I do want to. Say one thing. I do.
Dear God.
No, I love that we get to do this together. It's so cool because and we're all adults, and it's just cool that we get to do this podcast together and talk about movies and we might disagree, but we all love each other, which is awesome. I hope we continue this after the award season and hashtag Dunkirk.
There you go. I like it. So thank you all for tuning in. We appreciate it. We'll see you on Wednesday the 17th. Tune in to the Critics' Choice and look for Kevin and I in the audience. And we'll see you guys. We'll see you guys next week.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.